Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Jean-Claude Van Damme's 1996 film, The Quest. Joining me is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Ben, we're in triple digits, which means we're finally a legitimate podcast.
I think so. I think 100 episodes equals legitimacy in a lot of people's eyes. So, congratulations.
Yeah, maybe we can hit double-digit number of fans.
Maybe. That one can only hope. We also have a couple special guests with us. This is actually a reunion of the first episode of this podcast. We figured we'd bring it cyclical style. And so I'll introduce the people who joined us for episode one, All Things Batman. Our former podcast co-host, Pat Miller.
Hey, how's it going?
Good to have you back,
sir. Or just Pat.
Thank you, sir.
And also a very special guest, a good friend of ours, Jared Blanchard, Skyping in from Vermont, is it?
Oh, yes. Right. Quite, indeed.
All right. Well, glad to have you back. Jared, I think you were on an episode that we did somewhere in like the number 30s. Where we talked about Signs. Yeah, that was a while back now. But yeah, good to have you back on the show. Thanks for agreeing to come back, especially for a momentous occasion as this one. If you guys are just joining us for the first time, we start every episode with a character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com, and you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So I have the character name game for you guys. Keeping in mind, of course, the way to play this game, Jared, as a refresher for you and for the people who may be joining us as new listeners, I'll give you guys a character name, and then you have to give, at the end of the episode, let me know what character you think, what movie you think that character is from. So the character name for this week is Jim Street. Jim Street, yes, like an avenue street.
It's Jim Avenue?
No, it's Jim Street.
Oh.
And then you also have to keep in mind there has to be some sort of loose connection to a movie that came out in theaters this past weekend. So, yeah, we'll come back and guess that a little bit later on. For now, let's move into the media consumed sections, the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, any sort of cool events we've been to. Tyler, let's start with you. What have you been consuming recently?
Been here in L.A. for the past couple of weeks, months. Seems like a long time.
Time is becoming irrelevant.
UCB, the Upright Citizens Brigade, is right down the street, and so I've been going to a lot of events down there. I think ASCAT was one of them, and then Shut Up, I Hate You was another kind of like round table event where they talked about politics and showed some kind of stupid videos that, you know, was pretty funny. I think former guest DC Pearson was on that panel.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't recognize me because we've only met audially, but that's okay.
Shout out to DC.
Shout out also the District of Columbia as well. To those people who
that really doesn't get enough shout outs these
no,
days.
No, it really doesn't. So. Just because it's not a state doesn't mean it doesn't deserve a shout out. So that was pretty good. And then I went and saw another podcast recording, Doug Loves Movies, starring Doug Betson,
who
was high.
Which you've talked about on this podcast.
I believe I have. Yeah, he was high as shit when he walked in. And it was all right. Sarah Silverman was there and two other people I'm not familiar with. Sorry. But yeah, you might hear me. I don't think I said anything like outrageous.
Screamed
where you could
out
just,
in the
yeah,
background.
I didn't say anything that would catch on a podcast. But, I made some woos and stuff. So maybe, guys, if you just listen for every woo, that might be me.
All also, right. You booed a joke on the Conan show.
I booed a joke on the Conan show, yeah. And I think like two other people booed too. So there was like, I was part of a committee of boos.
Right.
On that episode of Conan's.
Well, what was the joke he disproved of?
Oh, he was talking about Chick-fil-A.
And Tyler booed.
So a bunch of people booed.
Nice. So Tyler, as a longtime fan of comedy podcasts and stuff, UCB is kind of a mecca for that world. What are your kind of overall thoughts about the place itself and maybe some of the...
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I think I'd go there like every night if I was around here all the time, but... just like the little atmosphere it has, but the number one comedy podcast in my heart is the Not Just New Movies podcast right here, right now, recording live, number 100. Whoa, whoa!
All right. Jared, let's go to you. What have you been consuming recently?
Well, using my Netflix account, I have been watching Frasier, so I'm just going to introduce some not just new television to the...
Excellent.
You know what? I'm not proud. I'll make puns. Anyways, Frasier, it's the show, there's these white people, and they have money, and they have problems that really aren't problems, but they shout at each other a lot.
This is like one of the, I remember it being like very critically acclaimed when it was on the air. Like, people loved this show, and of course it's a spinoff of Cheers, which is another much beloved classic television series. Did you watch the show as a kid when you were growing up, Jared, or are you just now going through it for the first time randomly, or what?
Oh yeah, I've just come to it. I didn't watch much television that wasn't animated as a kid, and I continue to follow that trend.
Okay.
But I've made a special exception for the deep growly baritone of Kelsey Grammer.
Okay.
I gotta say, if I could fill a business suit like that man, I would probably just be very happy.
How about that Roz, Jared?
You know what? I'm totally with you. I'm 100% with you on Roz, right? That voice, and then, you know, she's apparently very easy.
Low steam, yep.
Yeah, all you got to do is offer her a cup of coffee, and you're in like Flynn, man.
I like...
Swoop and squat.
One of the big, I guess, draws to Frasier for fans watching it back in the day was that he hosts this radio show, and like different celebrities would call in, and they would always be like uncredited, I think. But they would, you know, he would just talk to people, and it was like whoever they could find near the studio they were shooting that day. And I think there's a video on YouTube that you can probably find that is a collection of all of those kind of really quick phone cameos on Frasier, so people can check that out if they're not willing to go through the entire series on Netflix instant.
Which you should do.
I recently watched an episode where Rufus Wainwright was the call-in guest.
Okay, that's random. Yeah, it really must have been...
Of all the celebrity call-ins, one with the Rufus Wainwright.
No, I think it goes to show you what they consider a celebrity call-in.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
I'm pretty sure now that you've hit your 100th episode of this show, you could have been a celebrity call-in.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
All right, I guess, yeah. All right, well, Pat, let's go to you. What have you been checking out recently?
Been consuming a lot, or a little, which, however you want to look at it. The Olympics, I don't know. I don't really feel like talking about that. There's a lot of swimming.
USA, USA, USA.
I'm tired of swimming, but, you know, still enjoying some of that coverage. I did want to make a special note about the Cloud Atlas trailer. I recently consumed that.
Yep.
Normally trailer consumption goes against my philosophy. I think... Ben and I have had this discussion. I don't know if it's publicly been spoken of.
But Make it happen now. Make it happen.
So
episode 100.
We conceived of this strategy for the movie Inception. Christopher Nolan directed this, and there really wasn't much I needed to know about the movie to know that I was going to see it. You know, great cast. Christopher Nolan directs it, who I'm a big fan of, and the. You know, the story elements of it were there. It's about, you know, dream exploration.
A heist within the mind.
Yeah, so all that, that's all I need to know. So I think, I don't know who came up with it first, probably Ben, but we just decided to avoid any and all media, i.e. trailers, TV spots, whatever, you know, whatever we could to not know anything about this movie. And it turned out to be a much more enjoyable experience when we finally saw it. Because, you know, there were no sort of visuals or anything that had been given away by any random trailer that we had seen. So this Cloud Atlas one sort of, you know, I didn't read the book, and I don't know much about the story, so I just went and watched it. Wachowski siblings, I guess, were directing it.
And Tom Tickler, who directed Run Lola Run.
What's it, French Tickler?
Tom Tickler.
Oh, Tickler.
I believe is how you pronounce it. French Tickler. Yes, a French Tickler co-directed Cloud Atlas with the Wachowski siblings.
But so
I would not be shocked.
I did make an exception with this one, and you know, I really enjoyed watching the trailer. It sounds so stupid, but
it doesn't sound stupid if you've seen the trailer, because yeah. This thing is like one of the most impressive trailers I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's like over 5 minutes. It's
I was
like,
about to say it's like 65 minutes long.
No, it's like 540 or something like that, and yeah, it's kind of I don't want to say remarkable, but it's you know.
It almost is. It almost works as like a piece of art in and of itself. Like, I mean, all trailers are to some degree some kind of succeed.
Sometimes the trailer story is better than the actual story.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I think American Gangster has a better trailer than the movie itself. And I don't think that's going to be the case with Cloud Atlas, just because
they...
This movie, like, it looks gorgeous. Like, there's so many visuals and themes and all kinds of, like, seemingly conflicting things going on that come together in a really cool-looking way in this trailer. So, yeah, I'm glad you dug it, because I haven't really been able to stop thinking about it. I think I've watched it, like, 5 or 6 times or something, so...
Yeah, and so, yeah, you'll hear... This is a rare endorsement of watching a trailer from Pat Miller.
There you go. All right. Well, for me...
And I heard that trailer was uncuttable, but they managed to do it at anyways.
Nice. shout out to the movie, or the book being unfilmable, or so they say. So we'll see how that actually turns out.
It's also unticklable.
That is the kind of comedy I've been waiting for all
episode 100.
Cloud Atlas, the actual film. You can watch the trailer now on Apple or whatever, but the real movie comes out October 26th of this year. So for me, I was going to talk about The Wire, but I think I'm going to hold off on that for a little while. Pat and I have been going through the first season of that, so we'll get to that in a future episode. For now, we went to Disneyland yesterday, and
got happier.
The happiest place on earth. And saw a short, I think it was like 15-minute long film, directed by Francis Ford Coppola, produced by George Lucas, idea by Lucas, I'm
starring
pretty sure.
Hooter.
Starring Michael Jackson, called Captain EO. And this was a 3D movie that came out in 1986, and obviously this was way before the current 3D boom. This was around the time of like Jaws 3D, and like when 3D was still... like a post-50s gimmick that was very rarely used in theaters, as evidenced by Captain EO being like an amusement park ride. They did that a lot with like things at Marineland and stuff like that. They would kind of produce little shorts and, you know, things at like planetariums and stuff. That's basically what 3D was kind of relegated to for a long time until Avatar and all these other things brought it back into the mainstream. Anyway, Captain EO. Jared, have you ever seen Captain EO? Do you remember this from being a kid, or have you seen it recently or anything?
This is the first I've ever heard of it, and
yes,
it sounds pretty thrilling. I mean, I think that
really?
3D is probably the best thing to happen to cinema since it's just the best thing that ever happened. So, I mean, this film just sounds fantastic. It's an all-star cast. It's an all-star director. George Lucas occasionally has good ideas. I'm in. How was it?
I'll throw this to the panel. I think Tyler probably liked it a little bit more than the rest of us. So this was the first time you'd seen it as well, right? Okay, what did you think about it?
It was like a super spectacular space Michael Jackson music video with an elephant man and some lady that made of wires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there were two songs, which were pretty good. Part of me.
Basic story is Michael Jackson plays the titular Captain EO, who is flying through space in a very Star Wars looking craft.
Spacecraft.
Right. he and his crew of animatronic lackeys who have, you know, display varying degrees of intelligence, basically are tasked with finding a homing beacon of some sort. They get into a random chase with people shooting them, like other spacecraft shooting them out in space. They end up crash landing on either a planet or an asteroid. It's really unclear. They go through another very Star Wars-esque scenario where they're like going down through the
trenches.
Yeah, through the trenches, as seen in A New Hope. And they end up crash landing on top of this beacon, and the whole point is they're supposed to deliver a gift to this kind of evil warlord woman who is leading this planet with an iron fist or something like that. It's really...
But she can't... She not only is going to see the gift...
Right, but she's going to hear it as well. And the gift is, of course, Michael Jackson singing and dancing to her.
Does he change her heart?
He changes the world, and I believe...
He physically changes everything.
I believe the song, one of two songs, is called Change the World. So, yeah, basically, he has the power... Michael Jackson, of course, has the power to not only wear a rainbow-colored shirt, but shoot rainbow-colored... beams out of his hands and feet when he does the Michael Jackson kick.
Yep.
A beam occasionally flies out of his foot.
I think one comes out of his crotch when he humps the air at one point, too.
Okay, all right, that would be impressive.
That does not happen.
Okay. I was under a different...
So he basically rips off the DC character, the Rainbow Raider, then, right?
A little bit, yeah.
Whose real name, by the way, just for fun, is Roy G. Bivolo.
All right.
Yep.
The most useless piece of trivia you'll hear in the history of this podcast.
I'm going to use that as a pickup line later tonight. Thank you, Jared.
That's no problem.
So Jackson turns all of this warlord, who I believe is played by Angelica Houston, it turns her own
Smash fame
minions. Is she on Smash? Is that show on NBC?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I've never seen that. She was in 8 Men Out, I think. Or no. I don't know. I was thinking of...
No, I think she's on Smash.
Okay.
She's on Smash. I think that's the only thing she's ever done.
Been around for a long time. She's John Houston's daughter. She's... I'm pretty
sure...
The
guy who can't... conquered Texas?
No.
Sam Houston, excuse me.
This is going off the rails. Anyway, Captain EO, I wasn't really a big fan. Pat, what'd you think?
I didn't, you know, it was okay. I can tell, I think it's kind of obvious for any of the audience to be able to tell that they've made some advances in 3D since this one was created, because at some points it was somewhat difficult to handle the 3D, at least for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's probably geared at younger audiences, and I think they would enjoy it more. What I didn't know until I had seen this, and then I started to recognize it as we were walking around the park, is people were wearing the Michael Jackson rainbow shirt. So I thought that was cool that this has enough of a cult following to warrant t-shirt selling.
Yeah,
I think that might have been the source of his power, too, because he kept flashing it like, what's up, here's my power source.
Here's my power shirt.
That could be. So...
All right, well, yeah, Captain EO is playing at Disneyland out here in Anaheim. I'm not entirely certain if it's playing at Walt Disney World. This might just be a Disneyland thing for now, but I'm sure you can probably see pirated videos of it on YouTube or various places across the internet in your own individual research. So
we
check that out.
Outdoors.
Right.
You know, endorse that method.
Right. No, not particularly, unless it's YouTube, but...
Yeah,
all right, so that's Captain EO. With that, let's move on into our review of The Quest.
On the run from the law.
Check the cargo! See it somewhere! Move it!
Captured by gunrunners.
A story. You work for us. Put him in chains.
Who the hell is that?
What's your name, son?
Christopher Dubois.
Mine's Dobbs. Your Dobbs.
Hurry up, man!
Sold into slavery.
Chris Dubois, United States of America, the best fighter I've ever seen.
Be ready at all times. You will learn that.
He wouldn't give up until he found a way to win back his honor.
The
best fighters will meet to compete in the Lost City for a dragon made of solid gold.
All right, so The Quest came out in 1996. This movie was co-written and directed and stars Jean-Claude Van Damme. Directed by and stars Jean-Claude Van Damme. It also stars Roger Moore and James Remar, who plays the dad in Dexter, for fans of that show. He is arguably the most useless character in this movie, but we'll get to that a little bit later on.
Is he the old-timey boxer?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, The Quest. This is a movie that has a special place in Tyler and I's heart. We have obviously referenced it many, countless times over the course of the history of this podcast due to its really bizarre open and closed bookend structure that doesn't really make a lot of sense. So,
Are they reading a book, Ben? Is it a flashback, or is he reading a... Does the what happened in the bar take place in the book?
All right, we'll get to that a little bit later on. We'll explore all these deep thematic issues.
I need to know now.
But for now, let's throw it to the people who haven't seen it before. So, I think Pat's the only one who hasn't seen it before.
Okay.
All right, so Pat, yeah. What did you think about The Quest?
I think it kind of fits right in with Jean-Claude Van Damme's filmography as a martial arts tournament-based movie.
Yep.
And I think in that sense, I didn't know that he had directed it. And I guess, what did he come up with the story as well?
He co-wrote it with Frank Dux, who is the guy that Bloodsport is based on, the real life guy, and obviously that was another popular Van Damme movie.
Yeah, so, yeah. It's similar in to Bloodsport, but when I say it fits right into the Jean-Claude Van Damme filmography, that's kind of an accomplishment, I feel like, for a first-time director, Jean-Claude Van Damme, because, you know, if I didn't know that he directed it, I would have thought, you know, just one of his other regular directors.
Yeah.
So a testament to him to be able to, I don't want to say copy, but capture the theme of his earlier successes with this one.
Yeah, I think that's a valid thing to point out. Directing
triple threat.
Directing an action movie is you know, like an underrated skill. Like you have to be able to like place people geographically in an area where the audience always knows where they are. There's a
like
lot of
Scotland and Russia and Malaysia and places like that.
No, that's Africa. Pretty obvious where those people are from because they're wearing the most stereotypical costumes from each individual country.
And another underrated skill
that is
making sure people know where the country you're from in the tournament.
Very good visual shorthand. Right?
Wait, he's a kilt. He's wearing a kilt. All right,
Scotland.
Yeah, gotta be. But yeah, no, I think that's
Like if his goal was to be to make it like what he has been in before, mm-hmm. I think he accomplished that.
Yeah, all right. Well, Jared, let's go to you. What did you think about The Quest?
I mean, I would say that my least favorite thing about the movie is the title.
Okay.
Because I think it should have been The Clown Who Won the World Martial Arts Championship. I think that's a much better description of what it was.
Little
a depression
bulky.
Era clown. What?
Little bulky title, but yeah, it's apt, that's for sure.
But he'd even have a quest. He just kind of like showed up and Roger Moore devised 6 or 7 different schemes and eventually he just fought in the tournament.
Yeah.
No, but he made sure to say quest at least twice in the film.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. I think it was like a it was like a Roger Moore imposed quest on Christopher Dubois. So,
Christopher Dubois.
Tyler, I know you love this movie. On a rewatch, I didn't particularly care for it as much as I did the original time that I saw it a few years back. It's tough to even really talk about like something like plot holes in a Van Damme movie because that's just like
you don't need to.
Yeah, you really.
It's gonna happen.
It's not necessary.
Plot omissions, I think, is the thing we should talk about here. Where it's not even a plot hole. It's like just things just don't happen.
Yeah, and then so things don't happen, and then things do happen that totally don't need to happen. Like the introduction of the female journalist. completely useless to the plot. Like,
hold up, but who writes the book that the entire movie comes out of? The journalist.
So that's a good segue into the whole bookend thing. So let's discuss this like in its entirety right now. So Tyler, lay it out for us. How does this shake out?
So the movie starts with old-timey Van Damme walking into the bar, and he's like, hey, can I get some milk with some whiskey and whatever, coffee. And he's like, hey, how about I give you some whiskey? Go sit over there. And then some bums from the street.
It's Richard Dreyfuss as the bartender, by the way. I mean, it's not actually him.
Fair enough. So some ruffians come in, and they're like, oh, man, give us your money, switchblade. And then Van Damme's like, you don't want to do that. So he uses his cane and just beats the shit out of them. And he's like, all right, now that all these guys are dead, let me tell you the story of how I killed, you know, other people. And then you begin the movie where there are other flashbacks even further back within the movie. And then it ends where he's like, it's a very short ending where he's back in the bar temporarily. And he's like, yeah, that's how it happened. And then a book closes. So I was always under the impression that the entire thing took place in this one book, even the revisiting to the bar where the journalist who wrote the book isn't even present.
Mm-hmm.
It's an awesome movie.
But I think that would imply that the journalist is really old by the time she's written the book. Because Van Damme was old and she was, you know, about the same
age.
She's
probably dead by then.
So
she's actually predicting the future at that point.
Maybe it was someone else closing her book.
No, it said her name at the bottom.
I know, but she wrote it, but maybe
posthumous author, like those Michael Crichton books?
No, like somebody just pulled the book off the shelf at the library, and Van Damme, the director, was like, yeah, let's just show somebody reading this.
Right.
Fred Savage as a child.
Right, that would be pretty awesome. So yeah, it's just really unclear, like, we've always said, if you're going to close it with the book, you should open it with the book.
Sure, absolutely.
But that just...
Yeah, there's one bookend missing, so the entire shelf sometimes may fall
off.
That
kind of asymmetry is what this movie hinges on. So, Jared, you're talking about things that just don't happen. What would you have liked to seen happen that didn't in the quest?
I just felt like there was at least another hour in there that I was ready to watch that just didn't play out.
Yes.
I would have liked to see more motivation from the boxer as to why he believes in Van Damme. Van Damme's Muay Thai training and how it in any way improved his fighting ability, because he seemed competent before he received what I believe was supposed to be 6 months of training and was no different after receiving said training. Yeah. Like, there was no training montage. I would say that's my biggest plot omission. And what I really want in a tournament fighting movie is a montage set to some up-tempo 80s rock music where Van Damme is just pumping iron and hitting shit. Where was that?
I think maybe he was trying to steer clear of the Rocky movies, but we did see that montage of the tournament going down, which I thought was pretty sweet.
And if you want Van Damme montages, there are definitely movies that accomplish that can serve that up to you. We've seen many of them. I think Kickboxer probably is the main one. I think that's the one where he's like trying to kick down a tree or over and over again.
But I guess my other big plot omission does go with the journalist. It's clear like they googly eye each other several times. At the end, after he wins, he puts his arm around her in a way that implies there was a scene cut out in which they revealed their burning passion. And then she wrote a book about him, but is not drinking a hot toddy or whatever in the bar with him at the end of the movie.
Right. Yeah, Tyler said as we were watching it, he's like, as soon as Van Damme puts his arm around her, he's like, well, I guess you're my girlfriend now.
That's how I felt. Like, it's like, and like, it's clear that's what's supposed to happen. I guess that's the thing. Like, it was so obvious that was going to be his love interest. They just omitted the love story, and he just has his arm around her at the end because he won.
Yeah.
Yep. That's a Van Damme movie.
So let's talk about Roger Moore. Pat, what did you think about Roger Moore's performance? Have you seen him in anything other than a Bond movie? Because I don't know if I have.
I don't think so. If I have, it's not coming to mind right now. I thought he was probably the best part of the movie. because, yeah, mainly because I had only seen him in James Bond movies, and he was playing sort of the, I won't say the antithesis, but probably the opposite of a Bond type of character. You know, he was wily, he was crafty, he was British, so I liked him.
Yeah, I think he, like, the antithesis of Bond is good because he kind of has that pretense of being important, and he refers to himself as a lord, and it's not even really clear, made clear if he is or if that's just like a made-up title yeah. that he gave himself. And yeah, you know, he dresses real slick and everything, but he is always scheming, and he's always got, you know, multiple things going on. He's kind of, he at one point says that, like, he's watching Van Damme fight, and he's getting his ass kicked at the time, and it cuts to Roger Moore on the side, and he's talking to his little lackey guy, and he's like, oh, he's totally outclassed, yeah. and then Van Damme, like, glances over at him, and he just, like, smiles and gives him this yeah. really big thumbs up, and it's like, this kind of, duplicitous guy is, and he's always, like, he's cruising around in that, and the hot air balloon thing, trying to jack the Golden Dragon. Which is a pretty ludicrous subplot.
That's my favorite part.
You like that part?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he's like James Bond, except not a secret agent anymore. Like, he's got the same personality he did in the Roger Moore James Bond movie, so I just think of him as, like, an old, out-of-work James Bond.
He's Dobbs.
Always which got, is what he is, ultimately.
All he's got left are his jokes.
Edgar Dobbs.
He's on a quest.
I will say the only other thing I've seen him in besides Bond movies and The Quest is Spice World. I don't know if you guys remember, but he played Chief in Spice World. He was like...
Wait, the Spice Girls movie?
I've never seen that. He's in like a Muppets movie or something, right? Roger Moore? I feel like he is.
He's at least been on the Muppet Show.
Yeah, maybe I'm thinking Muppet Show.
We talked about three Muppet movies in one of the back episodes of this podcast. You can track that down and see if we mentioned Roger Moore, because I honestly don't remember if he was in those or not.
John Cleese was in one of those. Does that count? He's British. No, but
I guess
Tim Curry does.
Bond connection. Maybe he played R in one of the
Yeah, he played R in The World Is Not Enough, and then
it's not the same person.
But no, not the same. Not quite the same. No. I like how, like, first of all, these Tibetan monks come out and just distribute these scrolls around the world.
For a very peaceful occupation, they do have a lot of violent fighting tournaments. For most movies, they're usually organized by monks.
Yeah, and it's
well, like how really else are they supposed to distribute their vast storehouses of gold?
Yeah, I guess they're just like, all right, we got to find something worthy.
Like, I think even in the Mortal Kombat games, the entire combat is organized by monks.
Mm-hmm. In the subsequent movies, of course.
Earthrealm.
Once James Remar's character, the old-timey boxer, gets his invite, and Van Damme and Dobbs and everybody kind of team up with him and travel across the globe. I think they're in Bangkok at one point. It's really unclear where exactly this fight is supposed to be going down.
I believe they call it the Orient.
Okay, all right. The lost city,
like 100 years ago.
So basically, they like inexplicably travel all through their run through various methods.
I think they take the Silk Road Marco Polo
they
took
ride
from
on
like
elephants.
Istanbul to Hong Kong.
They're cruising on horses at one point. They're anyway.
Yeah, the elephants die mid trip.
Yeah, because they just give up and get horses.
Right.
So anyway, they get up there, and then I think one of my favorite lines in the movie was like once. So Maxie Devine, James Remar's character.
That's the best name in the.
Maxie Devine, nice to meet you.
He like gets into a tiny little brawl with Van Damme outside of like a stable
Very small.
Or something. Yeah. Like I think they're like two punches thrown.
It was essentially a slap fight.
Yeah, and through that alone. He's like, you're a better fighter than me.
Passes the torch.
This man is world class.
Yeah, so he makes a dramatic re-entry into the arena and says, I'm Maxi Divine, but I'm giving my spot to Christopher Dubois. And then I love the monk, the leader's reaction. Okay, that's fine. If he loses, you stay here for life.
Does that mean that he would kill him or that he's just there?
No, he's like in exile in the city.
They're just like, we need a new dishwasher. It's going to be you if Van Damme doesn't win this. So yeah, I just like the kind of
what things aren't so bad here. You stay for life.
Just to take a step back, the movie does start with Van Damme playing a clown on stilts in 1920s New York. Yep. Anyways, back to where we were.
No, I think that
inconsequential.
I think that deserves deserves some discussion because I think Tyler, that's one.
Well,
of your
it's very
parts.
Similar to Nolan's Batman Begins. I mean, you start out as like a lowly billionaire who turns into a crime-fighting superhero, and Van Damme starts out as a lowly orphanage-running clown on stilts who turns into a Steve Harvey beating super fighter at the Tibetan tournament.
The Mongolian did bear a striking resemblance to Steve Harvey.
It's a story as old as time.
It is weird because I feel like Van Damme started out, like, his role is typically that assigned to a villain in a movie where he is the older man who has a small army of orphans who look up to him, and he encourages them to steal on his behalf.
Yeah, and then they almost get gunned down by gangsters who wield machine guns and burst through a door. And then
because of the actions of Van Damme.
Yeah, they just fire at will, seemingly killing hundreds of kids in the process.
And the older kid tells Van Damme, you must leave us. And Van Damme proceeds to leave them.
Yeah, what happens to those kids?
That kid, bullet wound got gangrene. He loses and lost his arm.
Yeah, he's like, Billy, you were shot.
He'll be okay. I'm a 9-year-old doctor.
he's like, you're in charge now.
You're Rufio.
Okay. Yeah, I like to think that those kids went on to become the Newsies.
I mean,
that would be. I mean, it's about the timeline kind of fits.
Yeah, right.
They battle up against William Randolph Hearst a little bit later on. Get their money. They turn legitimate after a little while. Let's see.
I just like the idea of the Irish cop trying to say a French name. All right, Dubois. You're going to get over here, but it's the last thing you did.
So we're talking about a little bit about Van Damme's direction. I don't know if you guys
excellent.
Noticed. I'm sure you
A+.
Did. Things would go into slow motion
often. Yeah.
And frequently.
You guys just cited the Wachowski siblings.
I was going to say.
There you go.
Predecessor to the Wachowski siblings.
They probably jacked it from the Quest for the Matrix.
Bullet time.
same type of syllabic title to a movie as well. The Quest, The Matrix.
Yes.
Wow, okay.
These coincidences don't come up very often, Ben.
You are reaching at this point.
More than a coincidence.
Jared, what did you think about the action in the movie?
It was through and through a Van Damme action movie. I would say that my only problem with the action in the movie is that there was a very long portion in the middle where there is no action whatsoever, in which they're just kind of wandering and Roger Moore says trite things.
Yeah, it's like the Lord of the Rings travel montage where they're like going across mountains and they're just like trying to get to the action-packed kind of joke-filled 20s prelude, and then there's the epic multi-country battle at the end, and everything in the middle is just kind of
I appreciate that it keeps moving and yet you still learn nothing about the characters during the entire travel.
Yeah, it's like when Van Damme falls onto Roger Moore's another person's pirate ship or whatever, and like grows a beard and works with them for a while, and then what, Roger Moore and his team just kind of take over. They just like pick out this random boat and
they out pirate the pirates.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Let's remember, it's not called the character development. It's called the Quest, which is the most important character.
Oh, yeah, that's very true.
All right.
And back to the action sequences, I liked the slow motion where they're doing the high windmill kicks.
Yeah.
And I also like the slow motion for the paper ball in the wind. Those were my two favorite.
Yes.
You sit right here, Chris. I'll be right back.
Yes, keeping in mind, of course, that this is in a book where Van Damme tells a story as an old man in a bar, and then it goes back to 1920s New York, and then it flashes back even further to him as a child in arguably 1890s, wherever. She's like, your parents are never coming back, and just crumples this thing and tosses it down. That was another thing, the framing in this movie, the framing on that particular shot, the slow-mo ball toss shot, it was like half of it was out of the frame for half of the shot. You could have just lowered the camera just a little bit and gotten the thing centered and a little bit more.
Van Damme took a piece out of John Ford's where you put the horizon like very high or very low.
Yeah, I would like to hope that that's what he would
think what it was meant
is for. Like, oh yeah, I'm doing this on purpose. It's like a stylistic choice to leave people like 6 inches of headroom on a one shot.
You want to focus in on the mouth, because that's doing all the talking. The forehead's not doing anything.
But no, but he would leave
it would be a lot of head room.
More up here. The frame would end 6 inches above their head. But anyway,
his directorial style. That's how he wants to leave his mark.
He left it because it made an impact on me. Some might say a double impact.
That was his Oscar play.
I just see Stallone having to physically remove him from the Expendables 2 editing room because he wants those kind of shots in the movie. No, we're not keeping those.
JC, the gun's not even in the picture.
I knew.
Listen to me, Sylvester.
I kick your ass if you don't let me.
they just constantly brawl, and it's like one of those cartoon fights from like Looney Tunes where they just get into like a cloud circle of dust and just body parts are flying out.
I liked when the sumo wrestler, who I called E Honda, would get like punched multiple times, and it was in slow mo, so you saw like every ripple of fat.
Mm-hmm.
And this was before like IMAX and high def television and pre-9/11. And so like that was. Doesn't really make any sense, but the fat roll's moving. It's like, that's something to look at. That's like a little exhibition on its own.
Okay.
The Foley work through that section where his fat rolls are rolling is pretty choice, too. I think someone's just hitting like a barrel drum and shaking it. I'm not certain.
Right. Or just, maybe slapping a pile of pancakes against a wall or something. It seems like something pretty close.
I heard Van Damme was intimately involved in that portion of the movie.
Just Foley work, yeah.
They make it like old-timey radio show.
So, I'm trying to think if there's anything else, like, major that we need
The martial arts were pretty cool.
Okay, yeah, so the different
fights right
after watching Steel, where the fight scenes were abhorrid.
Yeah.
It's nice to see a movie that actually respects the movement of the human body.
That's true, and Van Damme certainly knows that, and he even got his, like, patented split move in there. We always does a split in every movie, but this one was like a split kick that was slowed down in slow motion, so that's nice. What did you guys think about, I mean, aside from like the totally racist depiction of all the fighters, like any particular fighting style that stood out to you as being a favorite or anything?
I liked Africa because he stomped a lot.
Stomping? I always enjoy the capoeira, the Brazilian fighting
dance
style
fighting.
Where they, I mean, it seemed unnecessary, all the flipping and aerial acrobatics, but I always think that's cool.
Is that the guy who looked
it was really cool.
Like Eddie from Tekken?
He had the braids and
break dance fighting, basically.
It was, I think we laughed a lot when the Chinese guy with the different, like, animal martial arts moves, and Maxie Devine would just comment on every animal he took the form.
He's moving like an animal!
He's moving like a monkey this time! It's amazing!
That's what I meant when I showed by saying that he was probably the most worthless character. It's like, first of all, he doesn't even really fight.
No.
He kind of gets slapped around by Van Damme, gives up his title.
He does open a scroll with boxing gloves on, so we'll give him that.
That is impressive, yeah. And then he just turns into, like, Elizabeth Shue from Karate Kid and just, like, cheers him on the sideline.
You definitely, like, more than dramatic music, you know where Van Damme is in a fight based upon Maxie Devine shouting, though.
Yeah.
Like when he's yelling, get him, you know that the slow motion punches are going to be in Van Damme's favor.
And, like, I love how they would occasionally flash over to them just for, like, reaction shots after he would get kicked or something, and they would just be like, ooh, and grimace and stuff, and it's like, none of that stuff is filmed while an actual fight is going on. They've created that camera setup, they're filming the crowd, and then the director, who I guess is Van Damme in this case, or maybe some sort of second unit director, is like, all right, guys, now just act like somebody got kicked in the face. And I just like imagining them doing that for like 40 minutes straight, and then Van Damme like choosing, you know, in the editing room, which of these particular takes he really likes.
I like the pain on his face in this one.
Yeah.
French accent, it's really good.
I think it would be most interesting to see a behind-the-scenes documentary of Jean-Claude Van Damme directing this movie.
There might be on the DVD.
Really?
Maybe. No, we watched it on Netflix Instant. So okay. If anybody out there has the DVD, shoot us an email. Let us know what kind of
cool bonus features. I'm going to get the DVD.
All right. Well, there you go.
I'll have it.
Shoot us an email.
T-minus 2 days.
It's not on the Blu-ray 4-pack. I'm telling you that.
Oh, okay. Man.
That's a bummer.
It's a 4-pack of just the Quest?
No.
It's the Quest it's 4 like, times.
I think I got it for somebody. It's the Quest, Lionheart, Street Fighter, I believe, and I don't know, like, Sudden, no.
It's not Sudden Impact. Maybe. It's something not as good as Sudden Impact.
Kickboxer? Oh, yeah, it is Sudden Death.
Is it? Sudden Death.
The hockey one. Yeah. I think that was rated number one on my top 10 Van Damme films.
Oh, yeah. Easily the best one.
Which you can find at notjustnewmovies.com.
Notjustnewmovies.com. Just type in Jean-Claude Van Damme.
All right.
In fact, if you Google, that should be the top result.
Yeah, you would think. I mean, I even included an autographed picture of Jean-Claude Van Damme and said, I don't read blogs, but when I do, I come here or something. I can't remember.
All right. Well, yeah, I think unless anybody else has anything else that's on your chest that you want to get off as far as the Quest goes, I think that'll
I got my
much...
closing thoughts right now.
Okay, yeah, let's do it.
Like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Frosty the Snowman, the Grinch, How He Stole Christmas. The Quest should be on yearly, on repeat, on televisions everywhere across the world.
Okay. Any particular holiday or
no, Christmas?
Christmas. Wow.
And Easter, and 4th of July, and Labor Day.
All right.
Did I say Christmas?
We better stop him before he keeps going. Yeah. Pat, any closing thoughts for you?
As far as recommending people to see this movie, I think there are definitely better Van Damme movies. But if you're in a if you're in a marathon watching Van Damme mindset, yeah, go ahead and throw it on there. It's within, yeah, it's in the upper crust of Jean-Claude Van Damme movies.
Echelon.
Echelon.
Hey, Jared, how about you?
See it. You have to.
All right,
there we go, my brother.
I think I'll agree with Pat. Like, there are better Van Damme movies, but there are way, way worse Van Damme movies. We've seen a lot of them. Cyborg is one that sticks out of my mind.
Oh, that's
something
awful.
That no one should ever watch.
According to the top 10 list, though, there's only one movie better than The Quest. So,
all right, there
choose
you go.
Your words wisely.
But no, I think I see what you're saying. No, I think The Quest is probably worth watching if you're a Van Damme fan and haven't seen it yet. We talked about Time Cop on this podcast. Uh-huh. I think I actually like that movie a little bit more. There's stuff that's going on. It's just more of an interesting movie because it's not shackled by the martial arts tournament. Constructs.
Sloan's in it.
And Sloan from Ferris Bueller's in it, yes. Right. So, yeah, I mean, I would recommend Time Cop over The Quest, but if you're a Van Damme fan, I think The Quest has some fun in it, especially with the early scenes where he's the clown. And Roger Moore's performance is a lot of fun, too. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, it's harmless enough, I think. And we'll continue to use it as the exemplar for improper bookending in movies. So,
Wait, is it the book that has everything in it?
No, I'm just kidding. We don't know. We really don't know. All right, so, Tyler, I think you have an announcement for people.
Oh, yes. I'm going to have to leave my Apple II here in Los Angeles for you to operate because I am officially retiring from the Not Just New Movies podcast. I'm on the road to a brief series of unsuccessful podcasts, and then I'll be returning, I'm sure. No, just kind of, just retiring.
Taking a break or a leave of absence.
A temporarily permanent break, yes.
Right, okay, yeah. So no one knows what the future will hold, but Godspeed to you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm going on my own quest, I guess.
Indeed.
That's why I chose this movie.
I hope you end up in the Tibetan house.
Apple II chose this movie, yeah. Now, a couple things about the Apple II.
Yes.
You got to turn it on and off a couple times before it boots up.
Okay.
Otherwise, that spark... It just doesn't catch.
Yeah.
Second of all, half of the keyboard doesn't work.
Oh.
But that's okay because you only have to pull the lever.
Right. Okay.
Okay? Sometimes the lever doesn't work.
Okay.
Which means you're just going to have to like
start
throw it from a story window or something.
Shake it
Let
up
it fall.
Bit.
Shake it up a little bit. Bring it back up. Then pull the lever.
Okay.
And it should be fine.
And I can edit that part out of the show.
Yeah, you just got to troubleshoot with those things, and you should do.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you for bequeathing me the Apple II.
Bequeathing.
I will use it wisely and responsibly.
Yeah, with great technology.
Comes
great responsibility, but this isn't great technology, so it doesn't really take much responsibility.
All right. Well, the programming has been done, so from now until forever, it will randomly choose a movie with every movie ever inside of it. So
only
I
just
that.
Not just new ones.
Right. And yeah, I think I'm going to be taking just like a couple week break until I can figure out what I'm going to do about finding a new co-host, and I've got some things in the works as far as that goes. So we'll see what happens. And yeah, I guess so. We're not going to pull the lever on the Apple II right now to choose the next movie.
No, definitely not. No, it's actually broken right now.
Okay, so I'm going to have to hurl it out of a second story later on.
We're going to be doing that.
But
fun.
Let's go ahead and move on into the listener feedback section. If you guys want, you can email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566. You can subscribe for free to this podcast in iTunes. Please do. You can just type Not Just New Movies podcast in the iTunes store, and you should be able to find it there. I think technically it's still called Geek Tyrant -NJNM, but good enough. You can check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/notjustnewmovies, and we're on Twitter as well, twitter.com/NJNMpodcast. We don't have any new followers this week. We do have a comment that was sent to us by our good friend Leo, who left a comment on episode 99, Kazam and Steel, which we just talked about.
Check it out.
He says, here's a fact about Steel and Shaquille O'Neal's performance in the movie. He was nominated for a Razzie Award as Worst Actor for that film, but lost to Kevin Costner for The Postman. Congratulations for celebrating episode 100, and wish you guys luck. So thank
you
very
much. Now, is a Razzie awarded for good acting?
Absolutely. The worst.
Oh, bad acting?
Right, yeah.
Well, that makes more sense.
Opposite of the Oscars, yeah.
I have another fun fact to tie into that, and that's that Kevin Costner turned down the lead role of Air Force One to star and direct in The Postman.
Oh, I thought you were going to say...
suggested Harrison Ford.
Yeah. Wait, Harrison Ford suggested that Kevin Costner do that?
No, Kevin Costner suggested Harrison Ford to replace him in Air Force One.
Oh, wow, okay.
That's a good choice on his part.
Man, that's kind of awesome. But that also is interesting to think about what Air Force One would have been like with Kevin Costner as the lead. Like, Costner versus Gary Oldman, that kind of would have been
probably would have led to decades of success, as opposed to what Costner is now, where he's doing, like, the History Channel miniseries.
He is going
to
be a...
He also cleans up the oil in the Gulf Coast.
That's right. He is
He's a good guy.
Environmentalist.
Field of Dreams.
Yeah, he's going to be
forever.
Playing Pa Kent in the upcoming Man of Steel.
He's on the crab...
Yes,
the crab boat.
Superman is on a fishing boat for some reason.
This is where he gets his superpowers from, like Aquaman.
So, Tyler, while we're on this whole subject of you leaving, there is one more thing that you're going to be a part of, and that is
the
Ginger Dead Man,
the posthumous
3.
Ginger Dead 3 Saturday Night Cleaver After Midnight review,
yes.
Because we hit
the
not 600 fans, Ben, not even 300. But 100.
All right, that's
I'm proud
enough.
Of it. Proud of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So you
fans.
And I believe Panther Joe, maybe me, depending on when you do this.
Maybe.
I don't know. I'm not going to.
If you got
anything.
The balls,
you guys are going to record that episode as an After Midnight, and that'll be that can be found, you know, in the normal feed. So you guys can check that out as soon as it's released in the next couple weeks or something.
Yeah. So send us your thoughts.
Indeed. So watch Ginger Dead Man 3, and then send your.
This
own
is
reviews.
For you, people.
Yeah, there you go. So let's finish up the character name game to bring this episode to a close. The character's name was Jim Street. Jim Street. You guys have any idea what movie Jim Street was from?
I'm going to guess Assault on Precinct Precinct whatever.
13. No, incorrect.
I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry.
No, it's not a Jessica Biel movie, because I see what you're doing there, because Total Recall came out in theaters.
Yes.
And that is the right movie, but it's okay. Not Jessica Biel. That's the connection goes through Total Recall
in
at
Bruges.
Some point. No, but it is a Colin Farrell movie.
American Outlaws.
Now we're getting closer. No, it's not American Outlaws, although I never saw that. You guys went and saw it in theaters without me. I'm still bitter about that.
Suck it.
Whatever. We went right after bowling. You could have come.
I'm working at the Loop.
I have skit practice.
Anyway, no, it's not American Outlaws. Any other Colin Farrell movies you guys can think of?
Maybe. The Recruit.
It is not The Recruit, but you're getting closer.
The Shooter.
The one with Samuel L. Jackson that's a remake of the television show.
Yes.
What is it? SWAT?
Yes, it is SWAT.
That's right.
What I was thinking. Actually.
Jim Street. Nicely done, Jared. There we go. And of course, the connection is the Colin Farrell stars and the Total Recall.
Wait,
remake.
Doesn't he do most of his work in the street in SWAT?
Yes.
Is he in Assault on Precinct?
No, I think that's
Ethan
Hawke.
So that was
Hawk.
The movie I was thinking of was SWAT.
Okay, all right.
Isn't that a John Carpenter film?
The original was, and then they remade it back in like 2002 or something. So
is it Ethan Hawke in that?
Yeah, and Lawrence Fishburne.
Now, you could have also used SWAT next week, I believe, because isn't that one of the earliest roles of Jeremy Renner as the villain in SWAT?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, and that was before like people even really knew who Jeremy Renner was. Yeah.
I honestly thought he was Devin Sawa for half the movie when I saw that.
All right. Well, let's go around the circle real quick, wrap this thing up, and just tell people where they can find more of our work on the internet. Let's see. Jared, let's start with you.
I got nothing.
Nothing? Nobody. People can't track you down anywhere?
He's in the wilderness,
Ben.
No
Twitter?
No, I have no ambition.
He's the wildest ride in the wilderness.
All right.
I'll have an ongoing series called The Adventures of Tax Madison coming out in 2017 weekly.
That's been a long...
That's so good to hear, Jared.
A long-promised comic that has never come to fruition, so...
Drawing is hard.
I like to hear that it's still in development.
I have an idea now of doing the comic solely with wood carvings that I print onto a piece of paper. I'm not kidding.
Like reliefs?
Yeah.
Michelangelo.
All right, good luck, man. Pat, let's go to New York and people track you down.
Well, as I'm sure everybody would want to hear, the-life-after.blogspot.com. But I have not been keeping up with the updating of that very well.
However.
So if you want to check out my YouTube channel, which features the content that would be on that blog, it's the YouTube username is TLA100100. For some reason, the life after was probably taken by some doofus who doesn't even...
Who just abandoned the feed and doesn't use it anymore.
So
doofus.
That is my YouTube channel, and there you will find all the featured videos of the life after.
But you're going on another trip soon.
That's
which
true.
Means there's more life after.
Yeah, there's more to come. I'm taking another Europe trip. You know, we're going to hit up Copenhagen, Stockholm, and London. So be on the
foggy
lookout for
London
that.
Town.
So bookmark that YouTube page and keep
Hell
your
yeah.
eyes peeled. All right, sweet. Tyler, how about you?
SolarSentinel.blogspot.com. Jared, you check out that Batman series? We got part two coming up soon. Ghosts Among Us.
I'm in. I'm so sold.
All right, yeah, nice.
All right, and Tyler, are you going to continue to run the Twitter feed?
Possibly.
Movies? Okay. All right, that's still all up in the air. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I don't know what my responsibilities are going to be now.
As for right now, you can find Tyler making ridiculous jokes and things of that sort on Twitter. Twitter.com/NJNMPodcast. You guys can find me on Twitter as well. Twitter.com/BenPears. You can find me writing at GeekPirate.com, FirstShowing.net, Filmonic.com, and NotJustNewMovies.com, the namesake for this podcast. Music for this episode will come courtesy of the Quest soundtrack or score, if I can find some good stuff for that. If not, I'll probably just use Kung Fu Fighting again, because that's what I do for every fighting movie that we
or Men of Steel. Shaquille O'Neal.
Oh yeah, maybe. I'll just throw that one back in the mix randomly.
Can it be Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me by Elton John? I think that would be perfect, because I don't want Tyler to leave.
I will end with that now, actually, so that's a good one. But yeah, Tyler, man, it's the last time, so thanks for 100 episodes.
Goodbye forever, Ben.
Awesome. And yeah,
Pat,
we'll see.
Goodbye forever.
All right,
we'll see what
Jared, goodbye forever.
We'll see what happens with the future of the show. You guys can send...
Success!
Success will be in the future of the show? Okay, I hope so. We'll see what happens.
Super stardom.
But yeah, thank you, you guys, for listening. Thank you for the longtime listeners for sticking with us through 100 episodes, and we hope to be bringing you more in the very near future.
Episode 200.
And
here we come.
You guys have
or here you go.
We'll talk to you guys.